So today I wanted to touch on a couple of new things that are out there in the world of how to repair cruciate ligament disease. One is the use of stem cells combined with PRP as a non-surgical approach. The other is a CBLO, which is a variation of the TPLO, which you might see out there. And the third is a novel procedure called the symmetry technique, which involves an articulating plate. So, for no particular reason, I'll start with the symmetry technique or symmetry implant. That's symmetry, Simitri. And if you just symmetry in stride and hit Google Images on that, you can get a good picture of the plate. But basically, it's two separate plates, a femoral and a tibial plate, and they articulated at a hinge at the knee. And this is a novel implant that's been developed by a Canadian in Alberta. And there's been abstracts presented over time. Originally, there was a case study in deranged knees and using it as an implant for that, and then increasingly looking at this as a treatment for cruciate disease. And it's early days and they're working out the bugs. And at the latest paper that I have a printed abstract on was from the VOS conference that happened in spring of 2016. The inventor of the product did present again at the ACVS in the fall. And although I tended to like lecture, I forget if the data changed, but I don't have a printout. So I'll talk about the spring data. And basically, the abstract presented on 34 stifles that were followed 6 months out. The major complication rate was 15.3%, and the minor complication rate was 10.2%. The complication rate was significantly lower in the second half of the study, and also in dogs that were less than 40 kilograms. They felt that the lameness was resolved in 85.3% of cases, or 29 out of the 34 dogs. If I recall correctly, the latest presentation was based on 66 dogs, and I believe the complication rate was still fairly similar. They made some modifications in terms of determining the appropriate implant size for each dog and went from 3.5 to some 4.0 screws because they were having trouble with screw breakage. This might be something that you hear about, though. I've had one client approach me about the procedure, and then I've had another referring vet fire off an email because a client was inquiring with them about the procedure. So clearly, words getting out there in the internet world that this is an option. My reaction is that it's still early days. We don't have any long-term studies on these dogs, and my primary concern is cycling of the metal. It's one thing if we heal a fracture using a plate, and once the bone takes over, the plate's not really doing anything, and that's fine. The plate only had to do its job for a couple of months, but when we're talking about something that's acting to stabilize the knee for years, what is the failure rate of this metal going to be? And I had a personal correspondence with the inventor of the product, and his thought was that there wasn't enough strain on the implant that that was going to be an issue, which maybe that's the case, possibly, but I guess in the next breath, in the same presentation, he was talking about how they had to beef up the screw size because they had trouble with breaking screws, which to me suggests that, yeah, there is some significant cycling of the metal going on there. So it's out there. Maybe I'm overly cautious, but it's still early days. I will keep an eye out and see how these dogs do long term. And if the results are good, then maybe this has potential. But I hesitate to dive right in and start doing this one myself. So, second procedure I'd like to talk about is the CBLO, and that stands for Cora-based leveling osteotomy, and Cora stands for Center of rotational axis. And again, this, you know, if you Google images CBLO, you'll get a good sense of what I'm talking about. But basically, imagine a TPLO happening a little bit further down the leg, and where they've flipped the oscillating saw upside down. So instead of the concave aspect of the curve facing proximal, like it does in a normal TPLO, it's the reverse. It faces distal, that the smile is turned into a frown. So this is a review paper of 70 dogs that was published in Veterinary Surgery in 2016, and it looked at owners' responses to the procedure. So again, going back to the methodology, there's a bit of a curve in the tibia, and so there's an access for the proximal tibia, and there's an access for the distal tibia. And if you look at where those two axes intersect, then that's where your cora is. And then based on the angle between those two axes, you can make calculations to determine the amount that you want to correct. And they're trying to go for a postoperative TPA of 9 to 12 degrees. Now, if that's assuming there's been no soft tissue disruption, if they're still keeping a functional partial cruciate tear present, or if there's been a partial meniscectomy, then they drop the TPA lower down, more towards where the traditional TPAs of a TPLO go, more in the 6 degree range. So the argument is there's a number of advantages of doing a CBLO versus a TPLO. I think there are five major ones. That basically, it preserves the proximal tibial epiphysis, which allows application of other stabilizing procedures. I can see that being a value in a deranged knee, where you're perhaps having to put in some nylon for the caudal cruciate ligament, or for collateral ligament repairs, if you have to do some screws with that. The fact that you have more bone proximally for stabilization is an advantage in small breed dogs. It combines a standard TPLO plate with a headless compression screw, and that compression screw allows for excellent bone contact, and theoretically could improve the healing rate. There's no disruption of the articular cartilage and no leaking of synovial fluid with this procedure, and there's reason to believe that synovial fluid may be detrimental to bone healing, so again, perhaps these heal quicker. And because everything is distal to the proximal growth plate, then it allows this procedure to be performed on juvenile dogs with open plates without the same concern of cutting into them with the TPLO. So again, they looked at data, they measured the pre-surgical TPA, post-surgical TPA, grading of the osteotomy healing at the final radiograph recheck, and owner surveys. They recorded complication rates, dividing them the catastrophic, major, and minor. You know, catastrophic is anything that causes permanent and unacceptable function, or death, which I guess you could safely consider to be permanent and unacceptable. Major complications are complications that required further medical or surgical treatment. Minor complications are those that required, there were complications that didn't require additional surgical or medical treatment. So the original study had 107 stifles, 70 of which met the inclusion criterion, and so that's what they looked at. So the owners reported that 54 of the 70 stifles, or 77%, had full function, where the dog returned to the full intended level and duration of activities that they were at pre-injury without medication. 13 of the stifles, or 19%, had acceptable function, and 3 or 4% had unacceptable function. Overall, complications occurred in 11 stifles, 16%. All reported complications were major. Three cases had incisional inflammation that resolved with antibiotics. Interestingly, there were no reported cases of patellar tendonitis identified clinically or radiographically. 8 stifles had complications that required additional surgery. 6 of those 8 had late onset meniscal tears. that required second look arthroscopy, and then implant removal was done at the same time. The two remaining major complications were related to the implants. One had a loose compression screw that was replaced, and the other was a juvenile dog that developed a tibial valgus deformity secondary to screw malposition, and this dog underwent a corrective osteotomy. All major complications resolved with a single repeat surgery and returned to normal function. No catastrophic complications occurred. Evaluation of x-rays with a mean time of 63 days out showed that 97% of them had adequate healing. Five of the dogs had concurrent orthopedic disease, either medial patellar luxation or tibial valgus at the time of the procedure, and four of those five returned to full function. The one dog that didn't, that had an unacceptable outcome, the owner reports that the dog still licked at the plate and created sores 9 months postoperatively and was dragging his nails in the operated limb. So again, a 77% positive outcome with a return to pre-injury activities is comparable to TPLO research, which came in at 76.9. With the CVLO study here, 19% of the dogs had a residual intermittent lameness that required anti-inflammatory medication on an as-needed basis. So basically the people who did that procedure, their conclusion was they were pretty happy with that. So if you're seeing a CVLO, if it looks like an upside down cut, that's what you're looking at, and it's not that the surgeon was drinking at the time of surgery. This was on purpose. The last topic I want to cover is the treatment of cruciate disease using a combination of stem cells and PRP. Prior research had shown that PRP alone doesn't work for healing. The fibrin clot formed by the platelets just rapidly dissolves in the arthritic synovial fluid, synovial fluid being toxic to stem cells as well. So this was research out of the VOSM facility on the East Coast, and it was over 4 years. They looked at 36 dogs that the owners elected to have the knees injected with a combination of stem cells and platelet-rich plasma, which we'll cover that as the reason for using both those things in a different lecture. Some of the dogs were treated with adipose-derived cultured stem cells, and others were treated with a bone marrow aspirate. If it was cultured cells, it was 1 mL cultured cells mixed with 1 mL of PRP. If it was the bone marrow aspirate, it was 2 mL of bone marrow aspirate mixed with 2 mL of PRP. So although the initial sample was on 36 dogs, they only got 13 of them back for re-scoping. Part of it was because some of the owners lived far away, and a lot of it was that people just didn't want to get their dogs re-scoped for the interest of science. So we're still dealing with some pretty low numbers. But of the dogs they got to re-scope, 9 out of 13 demonstrated that they had neovascularization and a normal macroscopic pattern to the ligament itself. So they showed good healing of the ligament. 1 out of 13 had a partial response, but there was still some frayed ends of ligament, so that dog received a repeat stem cell injection, and 3 out of those 13 had progressed and were headed toward a full rupture and were then taken to a TPLO surgery. At 90 days of the dogs they tested, there was no significant difference between the affected limb and the non-affected limb on force plate. Actually, technically, it was a pressure mat, not a force plate. And the average follow-up time was 1.9 years. They followed up with owner survey, the Helsinki Chronic Pain Index, and again, pressure mats where they could. There were 12 questionnaires that the owners returned. 8 of those questionnaires belonged to sporting dogs. Of those dogs, 7 had returned to sport, 4 were competing at the same level, 2 were competing at a higher level, and 1 never did return to the same level. By 90 days of those original 36 dogs, 7 had progressed to complete rupture and needed TPLO surgery. Early on, when they first started doing these, they were putting the dogs in hinged orthotic braces. They eventually abandoned that aspect of the treatment, and we're recommending it. They do it for hyperdogs that they were just paranoid about, but in general, for dogs that were going to be reasonably compliant with the exercise restriction, they weren't doing that. And looking at the dogs that failed, they tried to find correlations with anything that would predict whether or not they would fail, and they didn't find anything. The degree of tearing of the ligament wasn't a factor. The TPA wasn't a factor. Whether or not they were treated with bone marrow aspirate versus cultured stells wasn't a factor. Whether or not they had an orthotic was not a factor. And I should mention, in terms of patient selection, on the first time that these dogs were scoped, they had to have 50% or less tearing on the cranial medial band. So anyone who had more than that was just, when that was found on scoping, went straight to surgery and had TPLO. But anyone who had less than that, and if the owner had indicated they wanted stem cells, then they were given stem cells at that point. The longest follow-up was 2.5 years on one of the aforementioned sporting dogs, 3 years on a dog that was a non-sporting dog. So my comment on this, sounds very encouraging. One thing they didn't really look at was what triggered the initial cruciate rupture. And was it that the dogs were predisposed to cruciate disease, or did they genuinely experience some sort of trauma that tore the cruciate ligament and it was a true sports injury and the dog wasn't otherwise predisposed to cruciate disease? Because I guess my concern with this is if the dog, sure, they blew it on, while doing some sort of activity, but if ultimately it was because their knees are built in such a way that they were prone to rupturing the cruciate ligament, then are those dogs going to have a worse prognosis for someone who genuinely experienced a hyperextension injury? So whatever that's worth, I think that's something to look at. Another possible application is if we've got a dog with a partial tear and they're going for a TPLO or a CBLO to preserve the remaining ligament. We know from earlier work that was done that just by tearing the membrane around the cruciate ligament, or even worse, tearing that membrane and fraying the ligaments contributes to ongoing arthritis. If it's a knee that was predisposed to cruciate disease and you take back the tibial plateau angle so that we're now no longer overly loading up that ligament and then combine it with stem cells, since now we have an indicator that the stem cells will patch up the ligament, then maybe that will prevent ongoing arthritic change and we'll get better outcomes long term from those dogs. And I have a case of that that will be going to surgery next week, and if the ligament isn't that badly torn, then we will be stem celling, and so we'll see how that case turns out for an N=1. So there you go. There are three different aspects of treating cruciate disease that some of the more internet-savvy owners might spring on you, and now you can sound fully informed and current on all the different techniques.